Welcome to the Diabetic Show. My name is Mark Philwitt, type 1, proud since 1987.
I'm Dobie Maxwell, sidekick, type 2 sidekick. Since 2011.
Not a sidekick.
We are the, I'm a front kick.
Maybe a roundhouse.
A roundhouse. But, yeah. Okay. We're back on the air once again talking about the insidious disease, diabetes, and we have fun, but we don't make fun. And there's a big difference with that.
Well, it means you can't sue us. You go to thediabeticshow.com. That'd be one place. The Facebook, that's another good place to stop by. Tell us your stories, comments, concerns, maybe not criticisms, comments and concerns.
You can take criticisms, Mark, at thediabeticshow.com. All donations, recipes, financial input, Dobie at thediabeticshow.com.
And don't forget those stock tips. Okay, let's now the show today, we're going to actually have a radio sort.
We have a great guest. He's a friend of mine from Reno, Nevada. We try to keep things either local, regional, or way out there. Yeah. But this man he's a comedian friend of mine, and he's also diagnosed diabetic 17 years, and he's in radio. He's just a great superhuman being, but he talks about it in a real way. And I think a lot of times people say, you know, you get the diagnosis, it's all over, but we want to put a little spin on it. We'll talk to Dave Mancarelli just a little bit. We got some news, though, this week.
Metformin. Huge drug, number one drug, really, for the diabetics like you, the type 2s.
Sure.
Is it a wonder drug? I mean, this is coming out this last month or so. It's an inexpensive medication. At this point in time, it's probably about 80 cents a pill. Mm-hmm. You take one a day, and it does help your type 2. I say wonder drug. I don't even take the thing.
Kind of caulks your pancreas is what it does.
Ooh, caulk. Anyway, it's a first-line therapy for the treatment of glucose-controlled individuals, type 2 diabetes. Mm-hmm. Also, widely used now to improve cardiovascular risks in adults with type 2. And now they're looking at it, which I don't know why they weren't before, now they're looking at it to be prescribed for people with type 1 who are overweight to help control the blood sugar and the weight in conjunction with a daily insulin dose. And apparently, it does reduce heart disease in middle-aged adults. Hello.
Now, the skeptic in me is going to ask you the question, is a big company like Monsanto behind the patent of metformin? I hate to be the skeptic, the conspiracy nut, but you know I got a tinfoil hat on, and I always am a little bit on the dark side.
Well, without Google next to me, I have no idea what I'm talking about. Maybe, Troy, if you can look up who
I'm saying is,
I'd like to know.
Never ask the barber if you need a haircut. Oh, it's the greatest thing since toilet paper. Well, who said that? Mr. Metformin.
Okay, well here's the deal. This study, 420 middle-aged adults, long-standing type 1 diabetes, on the average, 33 years. Mm-hmm. That's long-term.
Yeah.
Patients had, you know, those at least a few risks for the cardiovascular disease, including the BMI over 27. That's, you know, that shows how dense you are in a bad way. Mm-hmm. A1Cs greater than 8. Known vascular disease or current smoker, high blood pressure. The deal was they took 2 500 milligram tablets a day, and apparently cholesterol was reduced. Over 80% of the trial participants, they're already taking statins, which, well, now they won't need because metformin apparently is making the veins a little more elastic. Mm-hmm. And elasticity, big.
Very good.
Huge. Now, it flows to this question and this story. Metformin users are about 30% more likely not to take their doses. So, again, people are not taking their medicines.
I would agree with that.
But for metformin especially, a drug that it is, literally 1 in 3 don't take the medicine that's prescribed by their doctor.
80 cents is 80 cents, man. It's 80 cents a pill, right?
Well, apparently it's not good. You will have the impact on the body if you don't take it. Apparently that's what this study is saying. If you do not take it, you will die sooner than expected. And there was a little side note here about running with scissors. But the failure to do so will lead to complications. So if you are on metformin, it's 80 cents well worth taking. I got to do this one here. It had to do with your A1C, which is the marker for how you're really standing in the diabetic world. Mm-hmm. Monthly A1C levels wax and wane depending on the time of year. That's according to a new report. This is from the University of East Orange. East Orange.
New Jersey.
Yeah. Mm. It's Yeah, anyway. A1C levels are measured over a two-year period among 285,000 military veterans. So the deal is, during the winter, January to April, A1Cs are up, well, it says 0.22 units. I would throw that into maybe a 10%, 15% range, where your A1C is higher than it should be.
Two words, Christmas cookies.
It's everything. But the bottom line is they're looking for this, that, and the other as far as why.
Mm-hmm.
It's exercise. It's activity. It's moving. Mm-hmm. According to the research, people who live in areas where the lowest winter temperatures are around 50. So what are we looking at there? That would be
probably
Gulf states, parts of California.
Arkansas.
Yeah, a lot of people don't know that.
Nashville, right around there.
Nice place to live. Anyway, their A1C is much more manageable, and they don't have that little bump January to April. You live up in the farther climes than we're talking about.
Canada, pretty much. Walk to Vancouver.
The whole point of it is exercise more.
Mm-hmm.
Doctors told me 500 steps more to my regiment. That's a minute.
Shake, shake, shake. Shake your booty.
Whatever problem is the shaking when you're not moving.
Yeah.
I'm working on that. That's pretty much it. Dobie, now, I tell you what, let's put this off to the side because I can't wait to get to the guys.
Oh, Dave is awesome. He's gonna light things up in here.
And what is his – are we going to tease through the commercial or how are we doing
this? No, Dave is a comedian, a radio person. He'll tell you about it right now. He is quivering in his chair with a hot fudge sundae called Whole Wheat Ding Dongs. Waiting to come on the show. Dave Mancarelli, our guest. We are The Diabetic Show. He's Mark Philwett. I'm Dobie Maxwell. You, please join us for coming right now.
The Diabetic Show, the second portion. Mark Philwick, Type 1.
We have returned. I'm Dobie Maxwell. Joining us on the phone.
Wait, we got to jump in first.
Oh.
We actually have an answer.
We have breaking news or breaking
wind? Who makes metformin and gives a chance to say hello to Troy McDonald? Hello, Troy.
Hi, Troy. Hello. The Alex Trebek of our show.
Yeah, you hit that button there.
Yeah.
There you go.
There I am.
Okay, who makes metformin?
Bristol Myers Squibb. So it's a major...
Little guys.
It's not Bob's metformin and screen door repair.
Not anymore.
This is big money right here.
Yeah, Lord. Ever since Bob got a few billion, he's just not been. He's
thank nothing. You, Troy. Speaking of big money, though, our guest this week, a very talented gentleman, one of my favorite people. He is a diabetic. He is a radio person. He is a comedian. What more could you want? Mr. Dave Mancarelli joins us from his palatial estate in Reno, Nevada. Hey, buddy.
Hey, how are you? I'll tell you what more I could want, just a full head of hair along with those other things.
Dave is just a cool cat, man. I was around when I had a radio job in Reno. Mark worked in Reno. And Dave, you work in radio in Reno, correct?
Yes, I do. I'm at my last stop at radio in Reno. I'm sure if this one doesn't work out, it's back to Chili's for me.
It's amazing to me. When stand-up comedy looks stable, you know radio is completely out of control.
Yes. I can count on stand-up comedy being more stable in my 18 years, yes.
Well, it's nice to meet somebody from Reno who has not been terminated from the market. It's, everybody in this room
has. You know, that Mark is my radio claim to fame. I have never been fired from a radio job. I have quit six radio jobs, but I've never been fired. I always kind of see it coming, and then I storm out before they get me.
There you go.
Good. That's timing, buddy. Just like comedy, it's all about timing.
We both had that, where the general manager pops his head in the studio and he goes, hey, see me right after your show. And it's on a Friday.
Sure. Yeah. Oh, of course.
Okay. So anyway, first up, you live in just one of the prettiest areas ever. I mean, maybe not Reno, exactly Reno. It is pretty. But boy, you are just outside of God's country, just a little up to the left, to the west.
There are things near Reno that are beautiful, yes.
We don't want to upset any chambers of commerce. It's a great place to lose money too.
And listen, they're doing everything they can to make the city more culture type city and museums and plays and entertainment. They're doing a lot.
They're selling more yogurt. They want more culture.
Active culture. That's right.
That one up.
Well, the funny thing I think is there's a suburb called Sparks. It's every place has a local joke, and it's like Reno, so close to hell, you could see Sparks.
Yep, absolutely. I will resort to that joke when I need to.
Now, tell us about your diagnosis of diabetes. Now, I knew you in those days. So, what happened? How did it happen?
So, you and I met, I believe, in 2000, and that was maybe a little bit less than a year after I got diagnosed.
That's true.
I was 31 years old, Mm-hmm. I was 325 pounds. I lived a super sedentary lifestyle. I managed a restaurant. I worked graveyard, and I sat in a booth in the back, and I ate chicken wings and ice cream and, you know, whatever I could get my hands on all night. I never exercised. I didn't do anything. I was pretty sure I was probably going to be dead of a heart attack before I was 35.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got pancreatitis. Took me to the emergency room, came in and said, your blood is thick like paste. Your blood sugar is 612. And how long have you had diabetes? And I said,
huh?
I had diabetes about 3 seconds, because I had no idea I had diabetes. As a fat guy, I didn't go to the doctor.
Sure.
I didn't want to know what was wrong with me.
Right.
And it was a godsend, because I spent some time in intensive care with the pancreatitis, and I spent about 4 weeks total in the hospital. But I lost a bunch of weight. And I had to change my lifestyle. I had to go from sitting in my recliner in front of the TV, and I'm not making this up. People think I'm exaggerating. I had to go from sitting there in my chair, eating Nutter Butter cookies dipped in a can of chocolate frosting and drinking root beer right from the 2-liter bottle. I mean, that's the kind of lifestyle I live. And
boy, that sounds
getting
good.
That diagnosis with the diabetes forced me to straighten up. And you know, I lost. You know, I was 325. I go about 215 now, so I lost 100 pounds over the course of a few months.
Excellent.
I've been able to mostly keep it off, and it really was a life-saving thing for me to get diabetes.
So that's the first time I've ever heard it put that way, and that's why we wanted to have you on, because I think people get so afraid, and they say, well, you've been diagnosed with diabetes. Well, get out the root beer, get out the Nutter Butter. We're going all the way.
You know, well, one of the first things I said before I went into about a 2-day coma in the emergency room there, when they told me all that stuff, the guy said, you had about an hour. If you didn't have come in, you know, another hour or so, you'd probably been in a coma from the ketoacidosis. And I was like, well, so I got, what, about 40 minutes left now? Can I go get a dozen donuts? I'm going to have to make some changes.
Sure.
And that's the last thing I remember saying before I woke up 2 days later in intensive care. And I was scared. Listen, it's scary.
It is scary.
You know, Dobie, you got it recently. It's a scary diagnosis.
I was only 500, so I was you got me beat. I was only 500.
No, I mean, I mean that's obviously, once you're over, you know, you're over that 300 level, you're in bad shape, so it's all bad. But I was scared. I was like, I'm not going to stick myself with a needle 3 times. You're crazy. You might as well just kill me now.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, there's so much. I was lucky. I was married to my first wife at the time. She was incredibly supportive. My family was incredibly supportive, and all that is so important. Those are things that people don't think about, how you need support from your family and how you need support from you know, a group. I went for a couple of years to, like, a diabetic group, and we would meet and talk about recipes and talk about how you might start crying. I would cry in the grocery store because I was, for the first time in my life, reading labels.
Sure.
And I go, oh, I want this food. And I go, I can't have that food. And I would get so and I already have depression and anxiety along with it. So I would literally be crying in the grocery store. And I was lucky to have a wife that was supportive, and a family that was supportive, and a lot of resources here through St. Mary's Hospital that were supportive. So it really was a life changer for me, and really saved my life. I'm sure that I had heart problems and all kinds of stuff that now that I have to take a little bit better care of myself are not an issue anymore.
Let me ask you this, Dave. I'm sure it was a jarring change with the diet that you had.
Oh.
How did you do it, like, the first week, the first month, the first 6 months? I mean, did you withdrawal? How'd you do it?
Honestly, though, the first, it's gotten tougher as time has gone on. The beginning is easy because you're like, okay, I got to do this, you know, and your family's watching you, and your wife's, you know, oh, she's cooking now, and she's making you lunch. And I was so sick that when I got home, I couldn't get out of bed for a while. My sister came from Las Vegas and stayed with me and sort of took care of the household and, you know, was making me, you know, we were looking very closely at, like, diabetic recipes and meals and how many carbs, and I was, you know, tight about counting the carbs. And in this last 17 years, it's been, and Mark had it long enough now, probably you have too, though, but you can speak to it. It becomes a roller coaster ride. You're in tight control of it, and then you're not. And then you're in tight control of it, and then you're not. And so the beginning was easy. It's been tougher as time goes on, because what I always say is it's an insidious disease, because I could be eating, like, you know, you said earlier, I could be sitting here literally eating a chocolate sundae right now, and it doesn't hurt. It doesn't affect me right now, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's insidious about it. You go, oh, I'm going to have this chocolate sundae, and then you get in the habit of having a Frosty from Wendy's or something, and then it's that long-term damage that it does. I wish it was where if I ate a Snickers, my stomach hurt. Then I could stop, you know? So it's difficult. And And it was easy in the beginning because I was serious about it. It's become more difficult. And as you know, traveling around, you've been on the ships lately and traveling around and eating, and they want to give you free food, and there's not always a good choice. It's just there's a lot of difficulties that people don't think about. Again, I'm always glad that it's diabetes and not cancer, because mm-hmm. I can control it and I can live a nice long life, and I have, you know, I can make a difference with it.
Well, let me give you a little backup here, Dave. For people who aren't aware of the radio landscape, much of the radio food I ate was free. You know, you walk.
You nailed it, Mark.
People
hit it on the head, man. I mean, there's donuts in the break room every day. There's cake. There's cookies. There's pasta. There's pizza. I mean, almost daily in the radio business. And you know, it becomes food for me is as bad as, you know, cigarettes or you know, cocaine for some people. Food has always been my vice. So you hit it on the head, Mark. That makes it very difficult.
And free tastes good. It tastes great.
Yeah, free always tastes better, yeah.
I've never seen free liver. I've never seen that. It's always the stuff that can turn your pancreas.
I'll pass on that, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, if we had to eat liver and onions, we'd all be dead.
Dave Mancarelli is our guest from Reno, Nevada. We're going to take a break at the Diabetic Show. We're glad you're here. If you want to contact Dave, got to contact him through – you have a website, buddy?
Yeah, you can go to DaveMancarelli.com, and you can just search Dave Mancarelli on Facebook. I have a Facebook.
We got to spell out a traditional spelling.
Yes, the traditional spelling.
It's a lot of vowels in there, buddy. Your Scrabble word would not be high score.
Someone told me, it might have been you, Dobie, in our first meeting, told me, change that stupid name so people can find you. It's
Mike Mancarelli.
It's easy. It's men like a group of guys. It's car like an automobile, and it's Ellie like the broad from Beverly Hillbillies.
Beautiful. Dave is a great dude. We'll come back with our final segment with him. He is Mark Philbin. I am Dobie Maxwell. What are we doing, buddy?
Oh, it's the Diabetic Show. We'll be right back. The Diabetic Show. Third portion, Mark Philbin, type 1.
Back in business, I'm Dobie Maxwell, type 2. We are having a fun discussion. But again, I think people say, well, you can't laugh on a show about a disease. And, well, we are doing it in a friendly and a customer service kind of a way, in an educational kind of a way. Dave Mancarelli is our guest. He is a comedian, extraordinary, very funny, and in real life, too. See, a lot of comedians, I'll let you in a little secret in show business. There are people that call themselves comedians that are not funny people. They're actually dark, depressing people that have crafted an act, whether they borrowed it unauthorizedly or bought it or somehow crafted it. And Dave is just a funny guy, and we like to hang it out, and we have been friends for a long time, so you got to have him on the show. He's out in Reno, Nevada, and we are here talking about now. Dave, a lot of people nowadays, more than ever, are traveling. They have in their jobs, they're traveling salespeople, they have to be in hotels. How can you, you had an incident happen a couple of years ago. What happened to you?
Yeah, so obviously, when you do comedy, you travel. You know, you got to work out of town, and with the diabetes. And I remember, before I get into my story, I remember laughing. Bret Michaels, the lead singer of Poison, is a famous diabetic, and I remember seeing interviews with him when I was 20 years old in the 80s, and he's, it's tough to have diabetes on the road, and I was like, yeah, you got tons of people helping you, and blah blah blah. And I didn't realize until I got diabetes and then I was on the road that it is. Again, we talked about it a little bit in the last segment. Your food choices aren't always the best when you're traveling. And listen, I'm not getting on a plane and flying first class to my gigs. I'm driving 10 hours to the middle of Montana on a Tuesday. And so I'm trying to get something to eat at the AM PM while I'm gassing up, you know. And so there's a great gig in Grants Pass, Oregon. And it's two nights, and it's wonderful. And it's they sell out this little restaurant two nights, and it's 80 people both nights, and they love it, and they laugh at everything. And I love doing that gig. And Grants Pass is about 5 hours from here. And I went to Grants Pass last time, 2 years ago, without any of my supplies. I didn't bring my meter. I didn't bring any insulin. I was in one of those kind of spots with that you sometimes get with your diabetes, and you're like, I don't care anymore, like whatever. I'm only going to be gone for 2 days. I kind of just forgot to pack it, maybe subconsciously, and so I was there, but I was trying to be good about what I was eating. I was trying to stay low on the carbs and eat, you know, protein. But the first show was Friday night, went fine. Saturday night during the show, I'm about 40 minutes in, and I can't breathe. I can't catch my breath, and I'm thinking, well, it's just nerves. I get nervous when I'm doing longer sets, and I'm not breathing too well. And I get back to the hotel at about 10 o'clock. The feature and I go back to the hotel, and I throw up at about 10:30, and then I start throwing up about every half hour, every half hour, hour for the rest of the night. And again, I have no way to check my sugar. I don't know what's going on. And by the time we're ready to leave on Sunday morning, I can barely crawl out of the motel room. Well, there's no hospitals in Grants Pass. So we drive 30 minutes to Medford. And this is now 15 years I've had diabetes when this happened. And they check me in, and my blood sugar's 507, and I'm almost in ketoacidosis. I mean, it's the same thing that I talked about when I got diagnosed. And here I am 15 years later, but I'm in that kind of, people don't understand how diabetes affects you mentally, and you sometimes kind of just give up, and you're like, I don't want to live like this too much. I'm sick of having to do this thing and prick my finger every time I eat and take a shot and look at this number, you know, and take some medication. So I was in one of those modes, and I ended up, you know, 400 miles from home in intensive care for two nights in Providence Hospital, which is great, by the way. The best thing about Providence Hospital, I recommend, if you got to go to the hospital and you can make it to Medford, go there, because they have an actual menu and you can order whatever you want off the menu.
Sold. That's it.
It's like being in a, it's like laying in bed in a restaurant and eating stuff. You know, you can't order sugary stuff, but they took great care of me. And the feature act, my buddy Drake Nelson, I want to give him a shout out. He took great care of me and stayed in a motel and, you know, stayed with me. But I was 400 miles away from home. So my wife is distraught. I'm in intensive care 400 miles away. She doesn't know what to do. She takes days off work to come. Mm-hmm. My daughter, who was 14 at the time, is distraught because her dad's in the hospital in another state. My mother, who, you know, at my age, I'm almost 50, has way too much to do with my life, is also distraught, you know. And you think, it was an eye-opener for me, because I thought, listen, I have to take care of myself, not just for me, but for my family and for the people that care about
me. There you go.
Because, you know, it's as tough on them to be the caretakers and the caregivers and the people that are worried about you. And you know, you can't just go, I'm going to just forget about it for 2 days.
Dave, you bring up a point I have to touch on.
Yeah.
The monotony of the disease.
That's it. That's the best way I've ever heard it put, Mark. That's a wonderful way. I've never been able to say it like that, but that's the perfect description.
You got
to
be fired a lot. I'm telling you, it gives you a lot of experience. The point is, there are some days you aren't sure if you shut up. Because it's every day is the same. Yesterday,
that, right?
Tomorrow.
You guys were talking about metformin in the early part of the show. And it was, you know, did I take my metformin today? Mm-hmm. I take Tresiba now, which is my long-acting insulin, right? And I'm like, did I take my Tresiba shot this morning? Should I take it tonight? You're absolutely right. The monotony of it and the sameness. If you don't stick to your routine, totally forget.
That's it.
Now, you're type 1, Dave. Is that correct?
Yeah. To be honest, it's weird because I was 32 when I got diagnosed, and I've had some endocrinologists call it type 2. I've had a guy give me metformin back when you weren't supposed to take metformin if you were taking insulin shots.
Right.
Because he considered me a type 2. I have other doctors that consider me a type 1. The guy I've been with for about 5 years now likes to call it type 1.5.
Type 1.2.
So stay on the
Windows 1.2.
A new thing, right?
Well, actually, you brought up another point, Dave. There is now 1.5s out there.
Right. Which is sort of this middle kind of weird, you know, because most people with type 1, right, Mark, you're type 1. People with type 1 have had it since they were young. That's why they call it the juvenile diabetes, right?
I think
type 2 is more commonly associated with later in life because you're getting older or you're getting heavier, right?
Sure.
So my doctor now that I love that has had me on the right track for a while calls it type 1.5. So we look at all kinds of different options. This Tresiba is a new long-acting thing that I take instead of Lantus, and I still take the Humalog when I eat. And we're looking. I'm hoping to get it under control long enough where he trusts me to put me on an insulin pump. So.
That was my follow-up question. I have not taken that step yet, and I'm hearing everybody. Oh, I love it. Oh, it's this. Oh, it's that. And this is where it gets complicated for type 1. And granted, we're only 5% of the disease. Okay, but we're an important 5. The insurance is not going to help you out at all. People like us, we need the CGM, the continuous glucose monitoring. For some reason, well, how do they put it? We put men on the moon, but we can't check our blood for anything less than $8 to $10 a day.
That has been my reluctance in the past is the cost of the pump. And the pump isn't a thing that you plug into yourself and then it just takes care of everything. You still have to tell it. You have to count your carbs. You have to tell it what you're eating. You know, it's not, you can't, the pump isn't for lazy people like I've been, you know. But yes, the cost of those things. And I'll tell you what, this Traceba is not cheap either. The Lantus was cheaper. And so it's difficult what insurance wants to fight people about.
You know, Dobie and I have discussed this, the discovery, if you will, of insulin.
Yeah.
Couple guys. Not even an afterthought. They didn't even give them people. They gave them dogs to figure things out, right? And a couple of Canadians, and they literally made the discovery, and they gave it. They sold it. They sold it to the government of Canada for $1. $1.
Yeah.
And here we are talking billions of dollars every year with the insulins. And, it's not for wussies. So,
no, it's not. I mean, there's ways around it. You know, I'm lucky I have a pretty good insurance program, certainly not through radio or comedy, but I was lucky enough to marry a woman who works for the county here, Washoe County, and has a great insurance program. That's my advice.
She got a sister?
To get insurance, marry well. so I've been lucky, but I've seen people, and before I met her, I've seen people struggle, and I had a difficult time paying for my supplies. But, you know, check with your local diabetes foundation, you know, they can usually hopefully point you in the right direction and help you with that kind of stuff.
And also, when it comes to all the manufacturers, every one of them have a way for you to save money on their products. Granted, some have a few more hurdles, you know, flaming hoops.
No, but that's a great point. And you know, I don't know about you, Mark, but my doctor is always giving me a meter or, you know, giving me whatever he can that he's gotten from samples from the drug companies, you know. So ask your doctor to let your doctor know that you could use help financially. You know, they'll usually be able to help you out. But you're right, too. A lot of these companies will make it easier on you. For, you know, strips aren't cheap and all those things.
Oh, gosh.
In some ways. And again, there's hoops to jump through, but it's worth it.
Well, it always kills you, doesn't it, being a patient, that they will insurance companies will fight you for every penny for the pre-damage. But they have no problem paying for the heart attack.
I wonder why they don't want to pay for the preventative maintenance, but they'll go ahead and make it easy on me to be in intensive care for 3 days. You know, it doesn't make sense.
Interesting story. We have tried to get some of the insurance folks on the show. They don't cotton to that idea.
I could see that they might be reluctant to get on and tell the truth about things.
Well, you're in radio. You know, they always give you the old, well, we'll have our communications director call you.
That's right. That's correct. Yeah, we'll have someone get in touch with you from our communications department, which is one guy that just says everything.
Yeah, in other words, like click.
Pretty much.
Same thing. I got to ask you, though, before we let you go, Dave. Hypoglycemia. Are you still able to feel your lows?
So I feel my lows when I'm normal because I run so high a lot. Now it's getting better. When I start to adjust, so the Traceba has given me some lows. I don't usually suffer from lows because I'm not watching it as closely as I should, but the Traceba, I've had to back down the dosage because I do. And I'll start to feel it around 110 or 100. I'll start to know, I'm a little shaky. I feel it in my legs get kind of weak and my certainly I get the shakiness in the hands and I'll sweat, all those things.
Sure.
But yeah, I definitely am aware of those. And again, when I go a long time without getting lows and then I tighten down on my control and then I get a lot of lows and that's not pleasant and that's scary. And that's another reason where sometimes you go, screw it. I'm going to eat this ice cream because, you know, I don't want to be low later, you know? So it's weird, but yeah, I definitely still get the hypos. Yeah,
Dave, we're up against the clock. Dave Mancarelli, our guest. Okay. Plug yourself. How can we get a hold of you? Can we? If you have CD available, you're very funny. I want to get you out in east of the Mississippi, brother. I want to be your manager, Colonel Parker.
I would love to come out there. I'm afraid to fly, but I'll drive out there. Just Dave Mancarelli on Facebook and DaveMancarelli.com. That's MENCARELLI. I would love to hear from you. Facebook is the best way to find me, and I'd love to stay in touch with you there.
Thank you, buddy. Keep it a good fight, and we will talk to you again soon.
Absolute pleasure, Dave.
Thanks so much for having me. You guys are great. Thank you.
See you. All right, good.
Excellent.
Yeah, I told you. We're going to do it by diabetic comedy tour somehow. We got Chelsea Rice.
Diabetic.
Dave, and we got a lot of good people. So thanks. That's our show for this week.
Well, we got to get to the diabeticshow.com. Correct. That's where you'll find a lot of the shows, pictures of our guests, which we're updating. Mm-hmm. And we even have a Troy McDonald picture up there.
He eats well. It's okay. We have like a picture of him eating something bad. He's always eating fruits
and vegetables. Troy McDonald. Thanks again, Troy, for your help. And it's who was the pharmaceutical again? Bristol-Myers
Squibb.
See, Squibb is what really made them. They were Bristol-Myers. They were fine. But then Squibb came along and Bob. Well, anyway. Okay, I think that's it, right? We discussed the Facebook. We discussed
We're done.
Well, let's not say we're done. We're done with the show.
We're taking a break for several days until we come back next time.
But the general manager does want to talk to us after this.
Shut the door.
A raise. Thanks so much for listening. No sugar tonight in my coffee. No sugar tonight in my tea. No sugar.